This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Shannon Dreher. And Shannon, I mean, a big trade yesterday. Alex Colome come over. They were able to, get an outfielder in Denard Span and basically, spend $10 million of the $11.8 million they're able to save with the suspension of Robinson Cano. But I think the biggest thing is, I mean, we're watching a little bit of a transformation as far as the persona of this team. And we know this team can hit, although with the injuries and that, they're not being hitting. But they're changing themselves into a very dominating bullpen type of team.
Well, it actually, John, was the original plan, but then injuries kind of knocked that offline. If with David Phelps, if he had been healthy and been able to go, that would have given you that extra arm in the bullpen, that extra quality eighth inning type arm in the bullpen. And so, I mean, really, this kind of, I think, gets them back to where Jerry DePoto wanted them to be at the beginning of the season and what he envisioned for this team. Although I would say I think that Colome is probably a bit of an upgrade in that he obviously has the closing experience, the 47 saves last year. And one of the great things about that is Edwin Diaz has thrown more innings than any other closer right now in the American League. And he is still young and you do want to protect him. But when you're winning a lot, you want to roll him out there as much as he can possibly go. So you see the 3 days in a row. Last year we saw four in a row out of the All-Star break. And I think that hurt him a little bit in the coming weeks. Now you're not going to have to worry about that. On top of, A, you've got your eighth inning guy or a guy that can go into that mix, and B, it's going to be a lot easier if Scott Service has kind of any inkling that he wants to give Eddie that little extra rest midsummer. He can do that, and he's got a guy that's got all sorts of experience that he can throw in there. So to have him be able to lean on the bullpen to finally get that piece back, and then you look at what they've got also in Ryan Cook, who was called up last week. And, this is a guy, because of the injury history, is not going to be able to go out there 3 days in a row, but he's got good stuff. Again, he's got that history. This isn't a guy who was up and down with the minors. This isn't kind of like an extra in-between guy. This is a guy who had a solid big league history before he was hurt. You add him to the pen, too. If Nicasio comes around, which you hope, all of a sudden this bullpen, which has been surviving and very good so far this season, all of a sudden they become, you kind of put them into that nasty category.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was the one thing that you can see with the injuries. And when you start to lose the 95 to 97, 98 mile an hour guys, and you start to get down to like about maybe three or four, I mean, you want to have the juice. And, of course, now Colome comes over, and I think just looking at fan graphs, I think his average fastball is like 94.6. And I'm sure he can probably top that out, because we're talking the average. And that's what you need in the eighth and ninth innings.
It's good to have that, but it's also good to have different looks, and now you have that too. Colome is going to be more of a fastball cutter type guy. If Nicasio is on and his slider is working, that works well too. So you've got all sorts of options. It's not just going to be a matter of who's on. It's going to be what they have stuff-wise, and it's not just a matter of the velocity. And I think these days, the more you get into the matchups and the more information that you have on hitters, they can play it to, well, this guy, against this team is somebody that we would use in the eighth inning, but this guy over here might be better against the other. It just gives Scott Service so many options right now.
The head scratcher is, why would a Tampa Bay team three games under 500 make a trade like this and give up a closer who had been to the All-Star game a couple years ago?
Well, the first thing that kind of came to mind for me is when they made this trade, I was quite honestly shocked. If you looked at what the price of this type of reliever was in the offseason, they were highly coveted. They were going for big dollars. Nobody seems to want to trade them. And to be able to trade them for players that you are not going to need this year, I think was huge. But I think the biggest thing with Tampa is I think that, they are a team that money is a concern, and they are a team that they look around their division right now, and they're not playoff bound. And so I think they saw an opportunity to get rid of some salary, although they didn't send a significant amount of cash over. And so the Mariners actually have a good amount, almost $6.5 million left from what they had with the Cano money. So I do think the biggest thing was they're just not in a place right now where they need an all-star closer. And the fact that Jerry DePoto, and I think it was on your show, where as I was asked, what is the move that he's going to make? And I said, it's going to be the move that helps them the most right now. And when he makes up his mind what he wants, he targets it, he's decisive about it, he goes and he gets it. He's not a guy that's going to hold up a team and try and, I mean, he'll make a good negotiation, but it's not something that's going to go on for a long time. And I think because he does that, because he's so surgical about it, I think there are some instances where perhaps he doesn't get as much back. I remember when Taiwan Walker was traded. Now, this was at the time. I think we've seen, you know, what it brought back was huge, but there were teams that were not even aware that Taiwan Walker was available, and they're like, well, we would have liked to have talked to him about Taiwan Walker. You get Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger back. You don't feel bad about that, but the point was it was an early deal. He targeted what he wanted. He was decisive. He got in, he got out, he got what he wanted, and he moved on. And I think just the fact that they have that relationship with the Rays, which is huge, he could pick up the phone and say, let's do this now. It's unconventional to make a trade of this magnitude at this time of the year, but it's a different season where there are so many teams that are out of it. They were out of it before the season. There are teams that kind of determined that they were rebuilding. Tampa was kind of on the edge and that, well, we could possibly, depending on what happens around us. Then they lost a bunch of their starters. They're starting bullpen pitchers right now. So I think the timing was right, the relationship was right, and the fact that Jerry was decisive on what he was going to do and was able to do it so quickly, I think that kind of led to the deal. And for Tampa, I think the biggest part is they don't need an all-star closer right now. They're rebuilding. They need some young arms and a little bit of cash. So he was able to pull it off.
Talk about what they gave up in this trade, because they did give up value.
Yeah, they gave up value, and Andrew Moore, who this is a guy that I think he was probably rushed a little bit, as you know, because of necessity last year. When you go through 40 plus pitchers in a year, everybody's going to get used, and I think it kind of gave you an opportunity to see how his stuff was going to play at the big league level. And this is not a stuff guy. He's going to be a smarts and a consistency guy. And I think it was good that he got up and got a look at that. But he had a rough spring as well, and they started him at Double-A. So it was, I think, going to take more time with him than perhaps originally anticipated. So you weren't going to see him this year unless there was a disaster. I think that they were pretty committed to, let's take a step back and give him the opportunity to really kind of establish at this level before moving on to the next. And the other is just so far down in the system. You know, 15th round pick, a nice arm, putting up very nice numbers at a low A ball, but, you know, so far away right now. And I think that you look at those players and you think at this point they are much more replaceable than what you are trying to get. So I think that, you know, with the draft coming up and everything focused on the now right now and the fact that you weren't going to need either player this year, I think it makes a lot of sense.
No, no question about it. So and I think it's fascinating because, again, I think what's going to be fun is the dynamics, again, and I'm sure that Jerry's probably talked to you about it because I know he's probably talked to a bunch of people. I mean, I was almost wondering, it's like, gee, are they going to pick up Romo to be able to come in there for the first innings? Because remember, Romo's on that Tampa Bay team, and they bring him in for the first, and you know that Felix Hernandez is struggling in the first, and thought jokingly that maybe they would add him to the mix too. But you know, I'm just fascinated how this game now has switched to receiver. What does Jerry say about the switch to wide receivers? I mean, not a wide receiver, but to switch over to I think a wide receiver, the bullpen, and getting relievers doing so much more of what's going to be needed.
Now, John, we're getting to that time of the year where there's going to be much more football and baseball overlap,
yeah.
So we're going to
be
careful.
Yeah, we don't want to mix the two. No question.
You know, it's interesting. When I heard that Tampa was going to do this, and they've kind of played, there's some teams that have played around a little bit with it before, but this is the first time I can remember it wasn't so much a bullpen start as we are legitimately going to try this for these reasons. I kind of tweeted it out a couple of days. The first day they said they were going to do it, and so let's watch this. This is going to be interesting. And it's not just a matter of there are a lot of things that have to come into play before you do this. It's much more suited to a left-handed starter when you're going up against lineups with a lot of right-handed players. And the Angels with Trout and Cozart and Upton at the top are perfect for it. Houston's another team with Correa and Altuve and just kind of the monstrous lineup they have are good for it too. But it's really kind of more for And the way that I think Tampa originally used it was with the Ryan Yarbrough pitching. You had a young pitcher, and rather than have him come out of the gates and all of a sudden have to face the best hitter and player in baseball and Mike Trout and that lineup, get somebody with some experience and some stuff that perhaps is going to play better against them to get those guys out of the way, then put him in. And that way you don't have your young pitcher trying to get into the game against the tougher part of the lineup, with the thought being then he can get his two times through the lineup a little bit later and push it out further. I think in Felix's case, that's not going to work, because I think Felix is going to have that problem wherever he comes into the game. I think with him more than anything, and I think Scott Service said it a little bit after his start, is focus and preparation coming into the game. And Felix himself said, you know what, I think I need to throw my last 10 pitches at game intensity in the bullpen, which is something he hasn't done before. So I don't think it was so much that you need to get him past the tougher hitters and that he needs to be more at the top of his game when he comes into the game, or rather trying to get into it. So I don't think you would see it with Felix. I think there were some intriguing options with some younger pitchers that you could do it with, but I also think that it's something that you are going to see more, if you do see it very much, on teams with younger starters and teams that don't have established rotations. And the Mariners have a very much established rotation. It's not really a Band-Aid for a pitcher that's struggling in the first inning. It's just more of an opportunistic thing where if you do see that you do have a reliever that plays particularly well against a certain team that is very difficult out of the gates, that's something that you might think about.
Interesting. So now you look at this team since Robinson Cano got the suspension, and I think I was just totaling it up quickly. You know, they're scoring about 4.4 runs a game, which is pretty much their season average, but I think they've only given up like about maybe 2.3 runs a game, you know, during this stretch, which is remarkable.
Well, it's been the pitching. And it's so funny because I think everybody was in a panic about the pitching early. And I'll go ahead and say I was, too. Your starters, you couldn't get them. You could barely get them through five innings the first few weeks of the season. The bullpen had already lost Phelps and was just, you could tell, was starting to get tired. And then out of nowhere, the starting rotation, everybody starts putting up six-inning performances. And they don't have to be spectacular. They can be the, quote, quality start of six innings and three runs. This offense could outscore that at that point. And the bullpen, even when it was kind of in its shaky days, for the most part, could hold that down. You look at the numbers, and it was crazy because Scott Service kept talking about it in Oakland. Well, our pitching staff over the last three, you know, over the last month, the last 30 days, has been one of the best in baseball. And you just think to yourself, what are you talking about? Because that's not kind of what you were accustomed to seeing. You went and you looked at the WAR numbers, and sure enough, the bullpen had the best WAR in that time. The starters had the fourth best WAR. That's not the all-encompassing stat, but they're up in the ballpark. They were definitely in the top five, six, seven, eight in most categories in baseball at that time. So I think right now it's the pitching that's been carrying while you've been waiting for that offense to kind of sort itself out and kind of come back from those hits that it took in losing Robinson Cano, in losing D. Gordon, and not having Nelson Cruz. He's, with the injuries that he's had, he has not really been able to get completely comfortable at the plate yet. So the pitching has been carrying for a long time. I think it is 11 of their last 13 games have been one-run games, and they've won seven of them. So it's a big tip of the cap to the pitching, which all of a sudden gets better with the addition of Colomi right now. But ultimately, your bats have got to start coming around. You know, we've seen a lot of 2-1, 1-0 games in the last week. They need to come around the middle of the order that is, really kind of been hurting right now. And you want to look up and you want to see those 4 or 5 runs on the board at some time soon. But you know, as has been the team this year, when one part of the team kind of falters or one part is out with an injury, another picks up. And the pitching has been responsible for the better part of the month of a lot of the success that they've had.
And then finally, what roster moves are going to be made to open the two spots to get them on the 25? Because, I mean, they put Phelps on the 60 days, so now they're okay on the 40-man. But now they got to, you know, make two moves to try to fit these guys in.
I would imagine the last two up would be the first two down. You don't really have a need as long as you've got Nelson Cruz out there and okay and healthy and able to play every day. You don't really have a need for Daniel Vogelback at that point. And then John Andreoli was kind of that emergency player that mm-hmm. was called up when they weren't quite sure if they would even have nine that they could put in the field the next day. So I think those moves are simple enough. I think that, you know, with the addition of Spann, Ben Gamel goes into that fourth outfielder role. It'll be interesting to see if they have him put on the first base glove at all and start working on that again. That would be another place where you could get him some occasional at-bats right there. And I think you see the bullpen go back to eight.
Well, it's a interesting move and a very good one, and I think one that gets more excitement for a team right now that is 10 games above 500, which, of course, is great. Hey, Shannon Dreher, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. As we, I don't know, I thought the trade was interesting, you know, extremely interesting in the standpoint that they were able to at least acquire a closer and have more flexibility in the bullpen, resolve some of the bad issues that they've had as far as the, you know, the eighth inning, because, you know, they thought they were all set for the eighth inning and that did not work out. So I want to get your reaction to the trade. Also want to see what your thoughts are on what you're perceiving is going on at the Seahawks offseason program, the OTAs, which, of course, we were having access to this week. And, of course, we're able to see it. And I think we'll be able to see another one coming up on Tuesday. So looking forward to that. So you get 10 OTAs. And, again, quick observations. I thought that the running back looks good, the running back position. You know, they look like, you know, Chris Carson came in great shape. It looks like C.J. Procise came in great shape and is running well. You know that Rashard Perry was one of the stars of the rookie minicamp, as expected. He was a first-round pick. So, you know, things are on a positive nature there. So get your reaction to that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And if you do want to respond to the NFL's decision on what they're doing with the crazy anthem policy, which is right now not going over very well. It's one that is being criticized by players. Players don't like it at all. And so they are trying to figure out ways that they can try to counteract it. You would hope that the league would try to find a way to kind of fix it up, because right now, you know, they have continued the controversy and continued making sure now that, you know, it's kind of a guessing game as to what players are going to do. You know, you could, the way the rule goes now is that you have to be respectful of the flag while you're out there. And that's, I think, a good thing. But the players who don't want to be respectful and make some kind of a protest, you know, they have to go into the locker room and not come out. And so that, of course, is not going over very well. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The yeah, it's one where you can see there's going to be a lot of different things that are going to go back and forth in this, as far as, you know, what is going to be the you know, ultimate. Because again, the players definitely feel that they don't have a voice in any of this, because basically they didn't have a voice. The voice was not given to them. You know, it was not. It was taken out of their hands. I mean, it just went to the owners just implementing this, not even taking a vote. I mean, they just basically said, okay, here's what we're going to do, and you got to live with it, and can you live with it? What's your thoughts as fans on this? I just wish that you just say, okay, let's end it. Just get this done. Fix this. And the fix would have been coming back and just not having any type of you know, players on the field, which is what the old rule used to be. Let's go to Rick in Twin Lakes. Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Yeah, I agree with Jet, who was on earlier. NFL needs to show some leadership. You know, mm-hmm. there were times we had guys in charge of the NFL who had a vision, who knew what to do, you know, during 9/11 and during other sad moments in our history. And we're going through one right now. I don't think I need to say any more about that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we need to show some leadership. With that being said, get it done, you know. My observations, or I've been listening about the what the new coaching staff is doing. I guess they're trying some different fits. They no longer have a Fetty at right tackle, starting at right tackle. They're kind of mixing it up, kind of making these guys earn their way on instead of giving them a job based on their potential, which is something, you know, which they say that means you haven't done anything. And, of course, in Fetty, who led the league in penalties last year, never lost his job. He never set him down. They tried to talk to him. He wouldn't listen. And I think the best way to listen, like a new coach does, some of the coaches I used to have, nothing says it louder than to sit them down. If you want to get with the program, do things the way we do them, who knows, we may let you play on our fine football team. Otherwise, you'll be sitting or you'll be getting. Yeah, that's the way I see it.
Well, now you can see this is going to be very competitive, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of things given. I mean, we know, you know, we know certain spots there's that's going to go unchallenged. I mean, nobody's going to be taking anything away from Russell Wilson, and he looks great. But yeah,
you got to earn your way. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, I am encouraged. They seem to huddle with the off season. They seem to decide they need to get back to who they really are, running the ball, playing hard defense. And the things, when we got in trouble is we went away from who we are. Percy Harvin. Come on, man. Percy Harvin. That was, okay, yeah. No, we're truck guys. We don't need a Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We like the 4x4 guys, the mutters. And then we brought in this other cat, Jimmy Graham. Yeah, his vision of a football play was him catching a touchdown pass. But a tight end? Come on, man. It's just a lineman with meat hooks that they used to be called. But you got to learn to block, man. Or he never had it. He's a basketball player trying to play tight end. That's fine if you're in a passing offense. But that's not who we are. And the Seahawks don't do that again. Not just Jimmy Graham or Percy Harvin. Anything like that. Don't deviate from who we are. And that starts at the top.
I think that's fair. No, I can't disagree with that one bit. It's you know, one that you want to try to be the physical team. They're going back to that. They're going to run the football. Obviously, they're going to try to get the defense as good as it can possibly be. And so that's going to be the challenge. But I think in the end, it's still a better team than people outside this area think. I think that you can see there's a lot of potential with this team, but again, it's a whole new cast of characters that now we'll see who steps up.
That's what we need to do. I remember when Pete Carroll first started off, we didn't have the most talent, but when you played us, you know you'd been in a fight, win or lose. You wasn't ready to play next week, not as hard as you was previous week.
Right.
And that's what we need to get back to. Hey, thanks, John, for letting me in.
Hey, thank you. Have a good Memorial Day weekend. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ben in Idaho. Hey, Ben.
Hey, John, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good. So I had a question about the new XFL and the Alliance of American Football, those two new leagues starting. How successful do you think both of them could be, and if any could turn into some kind of minor league system for the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, I think the XFL, you forget about it. I don't think there's any chance it's going to do any good. I think that what you can see is there's, I think, a decent chance that, you know, this Alliance of American Football may be able to make it as a league that can be a developmental league. I mean, they've already got good financing. I mean, do you realize they're paying $750,000 per coach? They're offering general managers like $250,000. And they're getting good people. I mean, they're getting, you know, guys that are growing good. They've already got a TV contract. You know, CBS is going to televise their games. So I think they have a chance. And I think that the league should embrace it.
Oh, sorry. How much is the AAF going to be paying players?
That has not been determined yet. That's still to be determined.
I had another question. Yeah. JT Barrett, I'm a big Buckeye fan. Do you see him sticking around the NFL at all?
I think he has a chance. I think, you know, maybe to make it as a third, because what, he went down to New Orleans, and so, you know, he'll get good coaching down there, and he's got a lot of talent, and, you know, wouldn't surprise me that, you know, he can maybe, you know, it's hard right now for many teams to keep three quarterbacks. That's one of the problems that I think is, you know, kind of a problem overall, which I think, you know, they should really do that. That's why a developmental league, I think, is so important, because, you know, these quarterbacks don't get the opportunities, and, you know, this league is running out of good quarterbacks that can back up. That's a big problem. So I think that if they can, you know, if he can get down there, he's going to get good coaching, no question about that. So he has a chance.
Do you look back to the XFL, AAF, do you think like Portland or Spokane, another Northwest team, could have a team that could then be like the Seahawks developmental team?
At this stage, I mean, the way the city system seems to be going is that it's going to probably, I mean, they would have more of a chance, I guess, for an XFL team than they would an Alliance team, you know, because they're getting pretty good representation overall with some good cities. I mean, Phoenix, I think, just got on board and all that. So maybe they would have a chance more for the XFL. But again, I don't give the XFL any hope whatsoever.
Okay. And I had one final question. Yeah. I was seeing a comparison on Twitter between Brian Urlacher, who's going to get into the Hall of Fame this year, and then Zach Thomas, who hasn't been able to get in, and I think it's had four tries, but their stats are pretty similar. So I was wondering, like, what's keeping Zach Thomas out
He hasn't been on the radar now for several years and hasn't made it into the top 15. And, you know, as good as he was, just there was very little momentum whatsoever to get him in. And he was a good player. I mean, certainly Jason Taylor was able to make it and that. And, you know, as unfortunately, I don't think Zach's chance then would become in the, you know, once you get to the senior committee might give them him some consideration. So what you're talking about is 25 years after he's played, you know, then he starts to get some consideration. But right now, it's just not in the cards. Hey, Ben, thank you for the call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jake in the Tri-Cities. Hey, Jake.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Really excited. I wanted to ask you if it was true if Shaquem was playing a little corner.
No, he's not. It was pretty much exclusively as a strong side linebacker. They didn't have him in any pass rush. At some point, they might try him to maybe attempt to do some things at strong safety, but not at corner.
And one last thing. With Rashad Penny being a first-round draft pick, everybody's talking about Chris Carson's arms, but I don't understand when we're in a tight, you know, a suit and tights practice, you know, why everybody's getting so excited. I know Chris looked really good last year, and I think he's going to be a fine back, but Rashad Penny, he looks like a back that can take it to the house anytime.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you watched in practice yesterday or on Thursday, you saw real good speed that was there that Carson can take it to the house too. I mean, he looked really good.
One last question. Yeah. Russell Wilson, he's looking really in shape these days.
Yes.
Is that he's really looking like he's ready to come back for another MVP-type performance of a season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited of the play-action passing game once he gets going,
because
I think he's the best in the league when it gets going like
that. No, and I mean, he's one of the best in football overall. And so, no, expect him to do some really good things. I would have to think that that's going to be kind of fun to watch, and he does look like he's off to a very good start. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just want to talk about the kneeling a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm coming from a fan's perspective, obviously. You got a little bit more pulse on the players. My tone's going to sound like I'm against what they're doing, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out at some point, what's the point, right? So you've brought this awareness. It's offended some people along the way, mostly fans.
Right.
And then, you know, you force the league, you lose some money for the league, you force them to come up with some kind of a rule, right? And not everybody's happy. So at some point, you got to realize you're an employee, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're losing the company money, they set up rules, whatever. I'm still not understanding the point. So if anybody doesn't know what the kneeling's about by now, they're not paying attention, right?
Right.
If you look at the breast cat, excuse me, the breast cancer stuff, pink gloves, I don't think they're asking for for the NFL to be the main point or the main cog of breast cancer. It's just to bring awareness,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you had a social issues awareness, but then an outlet, you know, wear yellow gloves or purple gloves or whatever for the awareness part, and then have outside structures set up like Susan Coleman or whatever. It feels like it's more of a fix, and less just you're not getting your way and you're upset.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious why, like Doug Baldwin got on there and it says, you know, he's very articulate and very smart and his heart's in the right place, right?
Right.
Everybody can agree with that. But you come off saying stuff like, well, I don't know what it's like to be a white person. White people don't know what it's like to be a black person. You know, I can personally say I don't know what it's like to be a millionaire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do know what it's like to be an employee.
Right.
You know? And so I can't wrap my, I just can't figure it out. I can't wrap my brain around what the end game is. It's not the NFL's job to fix social issues, right?
Right.
They can help bring awareness, but mm-hmm. at some point, you know, and especially making your fan base so mad with the method, you know, the what the flag represents to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So well, can you help me understand?
Right. And that's where the problem is. It's like they've left, the league has left itself open because, you know, it didn't really clearly define if anything would go wrong or controversial in this presentation. Because remember, I mean, the NBA, they work with the players and the players, it's like, okay, we'll respect. And if you don't respect, I mean, in the case of the NBA, they took Chris Jackson and they suspended him. He dishonored the flag, and so it's like, okay, but everybody was more on the page, where in this case, they're not. And so, like, for example, Doug Baldwin, I thought, did an eloquent job. In fact, you can go back to Seahawks.com and see if they have it posted, but I would advise to listen to it because, again, you know, as he said, it's like, listen, he was a player last year that towed the line. He did the right thing. He stood for every pregame. I mean, he did not do any kind of a symbol. I mean, he's a guy that's very involved in the community. And, you know, he was mad because, you know, they were trying to work a way that they could figure this out so that it could be beneficial to the player and also beneficial to the league. In this case, the league just implemented. That's all they did. They just said, okay, here's what we're going to do. You got to take it. You don't have any voice in it. Too bad. And that's why, you know, and he probably comes off looking bad in some ways, which I don't think he did, in my opinion, but maybe in some eyes, it did not come off as well. And that's unfortunate. But that's what the league has done by coming back and having this stand, by not just putting the players out of reach and just out of the conversation. You know, it's just go back to the way it was. It's all football. This is not all football. This is all controversy.
Right. Do you feel like that's the end game? Because I feel like the rule addresses the kneeling part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it addresses the, okay, this is losing us fan base and money. There's got to be other avenues still, though, on the back channels that the awareness is there.
Right.
You know, it's just a matter of working, you know, working with the NFL and not getting so much egg on the face. You know, setting up. You know, I come back to the breast cancer thing. I don't know how they got through all the channels to get the pink gloves, but finding those back channels and keep that pursuit going. But I feel like the rule is mostly to squash the, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me like that would be the intent, would be to squash that perception of disrespecting the flag only.
Yeah, because again, they're thinking is if we would take, you won't see the picture of somebody, you know, not respecting the flag because they're going to be in the locker room. But is that going to be good enough? And that's, I think, where the question is.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
I appreciate it.
All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing and running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor, how are you?
Hey, John, another great show.
Well, thank you.
Doing well over here. Any series coming up?
Nothing scheduled right now. I'm sure it's going to be coming up reasonably soon because I know some of the guys are going to be taking some time off and looking forward to getting back on the air.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to it also. Hey, wish I had a dollar every time you had to explain this kneeling rule to these simpletons, but, you know, it is a big waste of time.
To me, it's like it's so simple to fix, and they didn't fix it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
They just put more gas on the fire,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of just going with what they had and let the players or whatever side they decided to stand on or kneel on or whatever. But I do have a question now, the Denver OTAs. John, do you think the running back, Royce Freeman, how did he come out looking after the practices?
Pretty good. Again, remember, he's one of the better backs in a great running back draft, and you would anticipate that he can probably do pretty well. I mean, I think that, I'm still stunned that they got rid of C.J. Anderson, you know, particularly after a 1,000-yard season, but I think there's a big belief, and I don't know if he's going to be ready to start week one, but I think certainly, you can see he's going to be a real talented back that can do a lot of good things.
Okay, so he's a three-down back, and he's capable of coming out of the backfield for reception?
Yes.
Okay, because I know they were high on Booker, because it seems like Booker's starting to pick up a little bit more vision and patience.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his problem was, but I'd like to see some new blood back there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, didn't you like CJ?
Yeah, no, I love CJ. I mean, I wish he had a little bit more oomph,
mm-hmm.
but he was a great blocker. He had good hands, and like I said, he did have big plays. They weren't the breakaway plays, but he had, I think he was, tied for fourth? For plays over 20 yards, receiving plays out of the backfield, which
mm-hmm.
when you look at him, you don't even think that happens. But he definitely picked his opportunities and chose by him. So
yeah,
I was glad to see him go.
Yeah, very
smart. But with a couple flashes I saw of Booker last year where he's able to – I think CJ had a problem getting to that line in the horrible blocking Denver had. The hole closed up. If there was one, he wasn't. You know, he maybe a yard. He could fight for a yard.
Mm-hmm.
While Burko was able to get to that hole, maybe a half a second earlier, or maybe a full second, and exploit it a tiny bit. So I'm excited to see what's going on. Hey, John, you have a great weekend and take care of yourself, bud.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Don't forget, won't be on the air on Monday because Memorial Day off. Let's go to Ken in Seattle. Hey, Ken.
Hey, John. How's it going, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, a couple quick questions for you, and sorry if I missed something on Malik McDowell, but I know they were talking about cutting him, but then I never saw anything that or they did or is that because they're expecting him maybe now to be able to play next year or –
No, right now, I mean, there's no expectations of him being able to play, and he's not been cut. They did give away his number. I mean, I think that's kind of telling.
Is there any reason why they would be waiting to cut him? Or
well, because remember, parts of his contract are guaranteed, and, of course, if you let somebody go without a June 1st cut, you have to take, the cap hit for future signing bonus. I think there's a little strategy, I think, that's going to be involved in this.
So there's no doubt in your mind, though, that they will let him go.
No, no doubt in my mind, no.
Gotcha. Second thing, I was just curious, would it surprise you if our new running back, Penny, wasn't the opening day starter?
No, I'm the one that's been saying that probably more than anybody else. I think Chris Carson is going to get the opening day start. Then as time goes on, once Penny can earn it, then he gets a chance to be the starter. But I think as we speak that there's a decent chance that he's going to end up being the starter, Chris, because, again, I think he looks good. And we'll see how the battle goes, but I don't think it's a given that he's going to be the opening day starter.
Gotcha. Hey, one last quick thing, just a personal question here. If you a lot of Memorial Day barbecues going on, would you rather host a barbecue, have everybody, your friends and family at your house, hanging out and having a barbecue, or would you rather attend a barbecue?
Well, being that I don't cook, and I'm usually getting food from my wife, I would have to be with somebody that would do the cooking because that would be, more of a requirement because, again, with me not doing it, me going around feeding everybody is just not going to work.
not even a hot dog on the barbecue or anything?
No, not even a hot dog on the barbecue.
Okay. Okay, got it. Sounds good. Well, hey, have a good one.
All right, Jake. Hey, thank you. Let's go to Mike in Linwood. Hey, Mike. Oh, well, okay. We don't have Mike. Let's go to Greg in Seattle. Hey, Greg.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. I wanted to ask you your opinion about this whole Johnny Manziel experiment in the CFL.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little bit of background. I grew up in Canada, and traditionally, probably with the exception of Warren Moon and maybe a little bit of Doug Flutie, quarterbacks in the CFL have not really been a proving ground for the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you think, do you think that the NFL powers that be basically said, go prove yourself up there, or is this something he's really doing on his own?
No, I think it was no choice, because I think that there was no confidence at all that anybody in the NFL was going to give him a job. Because, again, you know, he's been out of football. He was horrible when he was in football. And so there was no there was nothing there to really give him a chance. And so I think that, you know, he had no choice. I'm glad he finally took it up, because I think he wasted time not doing it earlier. And, you know, there's no guarantee that he's going to make it. Because, again, there's a quarterback from Oregon that's up there that may just beat him out. And if that's the case, yeah, we'll see where it goes. But I think he went the right path. I think he did the right thing. Now it's a matter of how he plays.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I hang up here, I got a trivia question for you, John. Can
sure.
you name the 9 teams in the CFL? And I'll hang up and see if you can do it.
All right. Well, let's see. You've got Toronto, Montreal, British Columbia. You got Winnipeg. I'm too tired to maybe be able to figure all those stuff out. But no, I think that it's a good league. You like it. I mean, you know that you know Calgary does pretty well. Hamilton obviously is going to be, that's 5. And so, I got 5 out of the 9. So I probably should be able to concentrate more and be able to do it. But right now I'm not able to do it. So it's like, okay. But again, good thought. But again, I think Johnny Manziel did the right thing. He needed to get up into the CFL, because that was his one chance to be to prove that maybe he is a football player that can play professionally. And again, we want to thank everybody for being with us. Have a great Memorial Day. Our thanks to all the military that's done so much to us. Honor them this weekend. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.